Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Redirecting to Facebook Live, I see my thing working. It's delayed on my part, but now I see it. Yes, we are here. Okay, hello everyone. Welcome to the second rendition of A Pod of Their Own Live. This is episode 48 of A Pod of Their Own.
Jakey.
I am Allison McCaig. Yes, episode 48, the Jacob DeGrom episode. We have made it, folks. We're here.
Which means we're going to do our job, but somebody else is just going to ruin it after we get told.
Yeah, so true.
Who's gonna
sign on to Facebook right after us and ruin everything and give up the lead that we have built up, probably getting a hit and driving in the only run our damn selves.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, who's gonna give us run support?
Absolutely no one. No run support out there for the Jacob DeGrom episode.
Yeah, just tumbleweeds.
I am Allison McCaig. Hello, everyone. And I am joined by my lovely co-hosts, as I always am, Linda Cervich. Linda, say hi to Facebook.
Hey.
And Maggie Wiggin. Maggie, say hi to Facebook.
Hi.
So we are here. We're out here live. And it is the second rendition of A Pod-O Live. This week, we are doing Mets Show and Tell. So we each have our favorite trinkets of Mets memorabilia that we have in our households to show you guys this week. So that's very exciting. Oh, and by the way, we are part of the Amazing Avenue audio network of podcasts. So if you're not listening to and watching live the rest of the Amazing Avenue podcast, you should absolutely be doing so. But in the meantime, we are going to do Mets Show and Tell for you guys. Similar to how the cookies went, if you were watching last time, we're going to kind of take it in rounds where we each do one, and then we'll have three pieces each and do three rounds of three. So get ready. Here we go. So which one of us wants to go first?
I guess I can. Do we want to keep it in the cookie order?
Yeah, cookie order.
Well, last time.
Okay.
Yeah, cookie order. Let's do it.
I know. I feel so lost.
Gin, by the way. I know it looks like water, but folks, this is gin.
I feel so lost.
This is
like
water, and I wish it was gin.
I have nothing. Oh yeah, I guess I'm unprepared. I don't know. Like, I feel like I would be. Time. Okay. So I don't know. Should I do like a big reveal? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like drum roll.
Vanna White, that shit.
Yeah.
She knit at a baseball game with like a Mets. Like, they broke the record for the most people knitting in one place. And it was Vanna White who like set that all up. So
what? That's awesome.
I've never heard of that.
Oh, shucks. I'm suddenly having second thoughts about my Mets memorabilia, but I don't know. Maybe I'll want to spit something out of it.
It's okay. You can break out a surprise one if we have time. We can just
I'll put it on Twitter later. I'll put it on Twitter.
Okay. All right. We're not going to fault you for coming back. Okay. So my first one, I actually kind of wrote about this for my most memorable game. So I don't know if anybody read that, but this is my ticket stub from Mets Beanie Baby Day, 1999. I'm kind of cheating a little bit. But because then also, here's the Beanie Baby.
Free Beanie Baby Day.
make you rich on eBay.
Yes, that's why I went. Because obviously I was a millionaire at 12 years old.
Venture capitalist at 12 years old.
That market's only going to go up, baby. Only going to go up.
Only going to go up. The Beanie Baby bubble did not burst whatsoever. But so the backstory is behind this, why it's, you know, and also if you Google the pictures from this game, it is the most holy 90s thing you could possibly imagine. Like, Mike Piazza is holding one of these bad boys. Ray Ortega.
It's red.
Yes. Well, because my theory, my working theory is, I've never been proven, her name is Valentina. And since Bobby Valentine was the manager at the time, I feel like that's how they were tying it in.
Because, I see that you have the tag protector. Very nice. Yep, always got to have the tag protector. Very important.
And it came with a little card, but I couldn't find the card. And it said like Mets versus Diamondbacks. And then it was like sponsored by Dunkin' Donuts or something. But so yeah, definitely Google the photos because Edgar Alfonso was holding one of these. They're amazing. They're amazing. Like, they're wearing the black jerseys at Shea Stadium holding Beanie Babies. I don't know how you could get any more 90s than that. But
is the Pato officially pro black jersey? I know this is a topic of great discussion.
No.
Do we have consensus on that?
We're split, I guess. I'm anti.
I'm anti.
I'm a modest pro.
Okay. Because this was the only jersey I've had from that era, and these were like the hot item back then. So you needed, these were like all you could find, basically. And this jersey's kind of 20 years old at this point, but we're not gonna go there. But so I chose this as my most memorable game because, you know, I went to games as a kid with my dad, but this was the one game I went to because I wanted to go, not just because, you know, my dad was bringing me to the game. So this was like the first time I got to see like my heroes. Like, I went because I wanted to see my guys, and Ventura was my guy at that point. So, you know, even though it ended up being a 10-1 loss blowout, it was Randy Johnson against Masato Yoshi. Like, you know, I chose it as my most memorable game because I literally remember everything about this game. I could walk you through my day when there's like games I went to like 2 years ago that I have no recollection of, but it just left such a lasting impression on me because it was the first time I wanted to go and I got to see my heroes for 3 hours and I got to sit in shade and I got sunburned and you know, I remember just seeing Randy Johnson, and even then you knew he was amazing, and like, he looked huge even from the mezzanine up in Ed Shea. And you remember that if you've been to Shea, if you remember Shea, you were a long way away from home plate out in right field.
Oh, yeah.
Even mezzanine, I wasn't in the upper deck, but you were a long, like, they would swing the bat and you wouldn't hear it until like 5 seconds later. Like, you were so far away. So, yeah, I remember Pat Mahomes came in to relieve Yoshi after Yoshi was terrible. I remember Roger Cedeno hitting a home run. I remember John Olerud getting hit with a pitch and we booed because there was nothing else going on. And I remember Ricky Henderson stealing a base. Like, I remember everything about this game because it left an impression on me. And because, you know, back then I begged them to get the Beanie Baby. And so, yeah, that's why I chose this. Like, I have other stuff. But, you know, it was a lasting, and I'm so happy I kept the ticket stub, which is all yellow because I had it out for so long. $25 in the mezzanine. So, yep, this is my first one. And, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with her now, but.
I believe Unformidable, our podcast compatriot by Rob Wolf, has done a Pat Mahomes episode of Unformidable around the time of the Super Bowl because Pat Mahomes Jr. is in the Super Bowl. So
he was good. I love Pat Mahomes.
Gotta love Pat Mahomes.
Yeah. So, you know, like that 99 team, I guess, because it was the first team I really remember cheering for. They were my favorites. And even to this day, like, I think only the 2015 team could really top them for me. Jeez, these jerseys are hot.
We need to get the modern, you know,
The light weed. How did they play in these things?
Venting in it.
The sweat wicking, venting on the side.
Gosh, how did they really in the black in the summer?
I was going to say, in the black of summer, the heat.
The plotline in Seinfeld, was it not? The jerseys were so hot.
Yeah.
So I guess I am next. My first thing that I'm showing is the best bobblehead they've ever done. But it also is like very representative of a season for me. And this is the
amazing
Gary, Keith, and Ron triple bobblehead.
I love it.
It is like, I don't know how good my video is here, but like at the very least, the Gary one is almost uncannily.
Yeah, Gary's good.
And the others are good. Not awful for a bobblehead.
I mean, Gary kind of has a balloon head where it's like fatter atop and then goes like in.
Yeah. So this is just like, I mean, it's just the best bobblehead, but also like this was given away in the 2013 season. It was, they had like the social media night. But I can't remember what was going on that night. I must've been sick. That was the only thing that kept me away from the Mets that whole summer. But, a friend of mine, John, who's on Twitter, he gave his to me just out of like the kindness of his heart because he knew it really mattered. But yeah, this I will just always associate it with that season because that was the first season that I started writing about the Mets. And I finished grad school and I was trying to have a baby and it turned out there was a lot of like medical stuff that needed to happen that summer. And so baseball was like the thing that I just did all the time because I didn't want to do anything else. Like I couldn't go anywhere because you know you have to get like doctor's appointments every 3 days. And like it was like baseball was kind of my thing. And I went to the all-star festivities and I rooted for Matt Harvey. And it was just so like this bobblehead is just very near and dear to my heart because this is like the 2013 season, which was largely a mess, but it was a lovely mess that I got to be a part of in a very, very close way. I mean, I think I went to 40 games that year. Like,
oh, wow.
Like by far the most I've ever been to. Wow. And I would just like go straight from work and, you know, I'd be like, I'll just go tonight. Like, why not? They had the $10 student rush tickets. I still had my grad school ID because I just graduated. And like, that's what I did all summer long was like play with this bobblehead and go to 2013 Mets game. So yes.
Student tickets are the best. I went to so many cheap Orioles games in grad school. So many.
That is the best.
Yeah. So many $7 Orioles games. So many.
$10 Mets games, but like, that's
but
fine.
Let's be real. For New York, it's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So since Linda started things off with a ticket as hers, I'll start with the ticket that I have. So mine is a lanyard, which is why it's stuck. Okay, there we go. So there's a lanyard, but it is the last day at Shea ticket.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like rip it up right then and there.
I know, right? So
burn it.
So yeah. It's like it's one of those things. It's one of those things where it's like holding on to this is such a bittersweet thing. But you know, I think that holding on to it is good because even though the game itself was horrendous and something that most of us don't care to remember, I had a lot of memories at Shea, you know, and it was like. It was like where I grew up, basically, like falling in love with baseball. And so getting to be there for the very last day was pretty special. And getting to be there with my dad and the moment that will always stick in my head from the last day at Shea was when Tom Seaver threw the very last of the threw the first pitch to Mike Piazza. And that was like hugely meaningful for me because it was kind of like my dad's childhood hero throwing a pitch to my childhood hero, Mike Piazza, who I am repping today with the number retirement T. That's my first thing, just because it's one of my, like, even though it's a bittersweet memory, it's still one of my most, like, memorable games I've been to.
For me, like, I wrote this when I wrote about my most memorable game. For me, like, it's so hard to go from Shea to City because, first of all, like, you know, Shea was the second home. That's where I first fell in love with baseball. But Shea was just this explosion of color. The seats were all different colors. The building was blue. There was neon guys going around it. It just left such an impression on you as a kid. And then, you know, since I was younger, you know, we always went to day games because, you know, couldn't stay out past bedtime. And then now, you know, as an adult, I go to night games. So to me, like, City and Shea are literally night and day. Like, yeah. City is dark to me. Like, the bricks are dark. When they first opened, the whole wall was black. They had, you know, the olive seats. So it was so hard to just go from Shea to City for me because they were so different. And Shea had left such, you know, a big impression on me that, like, it took me a long, long time to warm up to City. And I'm like, I hope kids now feel about City the way I feel about Shea, because I don't think that feeling will ever go away from me. Like, what I wouldn't give to just see one last game at Shea.
I know, right? I think the changes they made to City made it a lot better than what it was originally. Adding the little touches of Mets history around the building especially made it much more welcoming and made it feel much more like our home instead of just some generic stadium. I know that the Jackie Robinson Rotunda is kind of like a controversial topic for some people.
I actually really love that rotunda. I think it's beautiful, and I think every team should have a Jackie Robinson Rotunda or some equivalent. And the fact that the others don't isn't like the Mets failing for once. It's the other teams. So I love the rotunda, and I'm glad it's there, and I'm glad it honors who it honors. I kind of miss the weird dimensions, but I know it's better without them.
Yes. Oh God, Brooke, that ruined David Wright. Like, how do you build something that ruins your star at the time?
Ruin him though. His 12 and 13 were amazing.
Like, wasn't that when they bought the fences in at that point though?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it didn't ruin him like forever. I don't know. For me, the thing about City is that, like, I went to obviously a bunch of games at Shea, but, you know, we lived in the burbs. Like, it wasn't always easy to get like two kids, you know, loaded out there at night. It was always, and so, you know, we went to a couple games a year, but when I, you know, I graduated in 2006, I moved down to the city right away, and I was pretty close. And so starting, you know, when I was no longer like a broke waitress, it was really around the time that City opened up, and I had a 7-game plan in 07, a 7-game plan in 08, but like I like would go to like 15 or 20 games every year starting in 2009 and would sometimes go to more. And so I think at this point I've almost certainly been to more games at City Field than I have at Shea. And they happen so early in the life of the stadium. So it really like became the bulk of my Mets experience very quickly.
It feels like you're building like a foundation almost. Like,
Yeah.
From like, from a lot of games at the very beginning of the building. And obviously like your kids experiencing it for the first time in that building. Is part of that foundation too. So I like Linda said, I hope that City Field can become that special place for all of us the way that Shea was for many of us and many people before us.
And it helps out there's history behind City too. Like stuff has happened there, like a World Series was played there.
So a World Series was played there. In case you are just joining us, this is a pod of their own. We are the hosts of Apato, Allison McCaig, Linda Servich, Wave High to Facebook, Maggie Wiggin, Wave High to Facebook. I don't know if I'm pointing at where you guys are on my screen, but I don't actually know if that's how it is. but if it isn't, just ignore me. But this is episode 48 of A Pod of Their Own, and we are doing Mets show and tell today, where each of us is doing is showing our listeners our favorite pieces of Mets memorabilia that we have. So now we are starting round two of Mets show and tell. So Linda, what's your next piece to show everybody?
I kind of saved it for last, but I think it's a nice transition. this baseball. I don't know if you can see it. It said the little inaugural patch from City Field there, the little pizza box. So this was obviously from 2009. And I should say it's not mine. It's my brother's. We were sitting out in right field, where you're actually in right field. So you like a home run could hit like underneath the Pepsi. Well, it was, it's the Coke corner now, but what was the Pepsi porch like?
Named in honor of the 1986 Mets.
Obviously. So we went in July around my sister's birthday, and they were playing the Rockies, because I have a lot of pictures of Mike Pelfrey warming up in front of us. And
he started off okay that year.
He started off okay, she said.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think he pitched bad. But so Jeff Francoeur was the right fielder. And really, the Mets had been embarrassed of the lineups they were putting out in their inaugural season. Like, this is how you open your stadium. God.
Big yikes.
Yeah. So, yeah. So Jeff Francoeur was the right fielder. And after warming up, he turned and went to throw the ball and totally overshot some kids. And my brother's 6'4", so he just reached out and grabbed the ball. And then later on, they were doing the t-shirt toss. And then my brother catches a t-shirt, too.
And how the other half lives. I'm 5'2". I have not caught anything in my entire life.
Same.
It was my sister's boyfriend at the time. It's her now husband. Were they engaged at the time? I can't remember. But he was sitting next to my brother, and he was like, I sat next to the wrong guy. he's average. I want to say he's like 5'10". So yeah, my brother was just like reaching over him. And but I just thought this was cool because it does have the little inaugural season patch on it. So even though it was an awful, awful year, it was still, you know, kind of a historical year. And
that's the season that I want to write a book about if I'm ever stupid enough to write a book. Is like, you've got the worst team money can buy. You've mm-hmm. got bad guys won. Like, there are lots of great. And like the 2009 Mets year was like supremely, incredibly, wildly terrible in so many like inexplicable ways. I feel like there must be a bigger story behind that, but
yeah,
I'm not gonna write a book. Some
bad juju going on in 2000.
It was like, you know, when like, you know, the backups to the backups to the backups were having like these unbelievably horrific injuries. Like that was the year, like Nice tore his quad or hand, it must have been his hamstring, but he like crumpled to the ground.
Heap. Oh, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even like, I can't remember all of the like horrid, horrid injuries. That was also like Luis Castillo dropped the ball that year. I'm pretty sure you like, that was the Ryan Church misses third base game.
Was that the year he got the concussion too?
It sure was.
Like, yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like, there's a book in that season, but I'm not going to write it.
Someone else could tell that story.
I was going to say, anybody watching, if you want to write that story.
Great idea.
We'll read it. We'll have you on the show to discuss it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Auto podcast guest spot.
But is it me?
Yeah, it's you.
Okay. Yep, I'm all good.
Maggie's next.
Okay. So this topic came up with our conversation 2 weeks ago with Mark Simon. I am a diehard scorebook user, and I, up until I started attending games with very small children in need of literally constant hands-on supervision, I kept score at basically every game I went to as an adult, and some as a kid. And I actually, like, this was the year I was going to teach Tommy how to keep score.
I'll do it next year.
Damn you, coronavirus, damn you to hell. But so I have a bunch of different score books that I feel are score pages that I feel are notable in some way, and I wanted to share a couple of them from one book that I have. This is mostly 2013. Oh, another 2013. So the first, and this is, I don't know how much this is going to come through, but this is a page with 10 innings. And here were the other 10 innings.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
Game that I was at. I kept score of the whole dang game.
Champion.
I love this score page. I almost want to like frame it, but then I'd have to tear it out of the book, and that just seems wrong. So that is like my pride and also my shame. There's one other thing in the same book that I wanted to that is relevant to one of our amazing Avenue family members, which is I've not been one to get a lot of autographs because I just don't travel in the circles where autographs come up a lot, but I always like the small number of autographs I've gotten, I have tried to like have a page on a scorebook that is like a notable moment for that player's career. And so here is Josh Satin autographing his first career home run.
Oh, nice. That's so cool.
So that's
awesome.
Our resident Josh Satin devotee. And when I told him what that page was, I said, could you sign it? It's your first career home run. He goes, oh, wow, that's rad.
So, that sounds exactly like something you would say. Oh, I love that.
I love it.
Oh, that's amazing. So
that is my favorite scorebook of my many.
That's the 20 awesome. Inning game, I distinctly remember that game, and I will always remember it because I was I was a freshman in college in 2013. And yeah, I'm not 30 yet, folks. This year I turn 30.
Don't rub it in.
Yeah, in a few months I'll be 30, but not yet. Enjoying the very last bits of my 20s. So
35 over here, folks. Let's put it all out on the table.
33. I'm Matt Harvey years.
Matt Harvey years. So I was a freshman in college in 2013, and I remember like watching it because the game was nationally televised. So like I didn't get to watch that many games during my college years because I didn't get the Mets station in college, and my parents would not let me buy MLB.tv. They were like, you absolutely can't because you will flunk out of school. They were right. So yeah, begrudgingly, they were right. So I could only watch the games that the Mets were playing the Phillies because I went to University of Delaware, which is Phillies country. We get Philly TV stations and such. So I could watch the Phillies Mets games, and I could watch all the like Fox ESPN. So this was I believe a Fox game because it was a 4 p.m. start. And so
it was a 1 p.m. start.
It was a 1 p.m. start, and it ended up going to like,
I have it in the scorebook.
And it ended up going to like
7:35. That's in the scorebook too.
Oh
no, you know what? I am mixing up my 20 inning games. That's right. I was not a freshman in college in 2013. I was a first year grad student in 2013.
Okay. That's a little more acceptable.
What was the freshman year of college was 2009, and that was that 20 inning game.
The Cardinals.
Yes, that one.
Way game.
Yes. That's the one I'm thinking of. Folks, I've already had too much gin. It's been not that long since I started drinking. I was like, 2013, that sounds recent, but whatever. I remember that 20 inning game. No, it's the wrong 20.
If anybody would like to know more about the 20 inning game, I have all sorts of bits and pieces of... Did you...
Who
that
started?
Was a Harvey Jose Fernandez start.
Really?
Wow. Yes. Yeah, I do that remember was, that game
was,
as well.
That's what I was so psyched about. And they each went 6 innings and gave up 1 run.
Wow.
And then Sean Markham pitched 8 shutout innings.
Yes, and then I remember that part.
Run, I should probably. Oh, no. No, he didn't. No, Markham did give up 1 run at the 8th inning that he pitched. and that's what lost the game. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I was mixing up my 20 inning games because one of them occurred my first year of grad school, and then the other one occurred my first year of college. So I was mixing them up. But my first year of college one was the Cardinals one. But this one was first year of grad school. And I remember watching it in my tiny apartment. At that point, I did have MLB.TV. So I feel like Linda and I are mirroring each other with our choices for memorabilia. So I will follow her lead once more. And I also have a baseball. This one does not have a patch on it. It looks like any other baseball. It's rather unremarkable. You can see, I'm trying to like see, you can see it's like scuffed up from like actual in-game usage here. You're just going to have to take my word for this because there's no like indication that it's anything other than a normal baseball. But this baseball was thrown to me by none other than Lucas Duda personally. So that's very fun. So the story behind this baseball is that this was after the year Lucas Duda was traded from the Mets to the Rays in that unfortunate fire sale where a bunch of beloved Mets were traded away because the team sucked.
For nothing.
And Lucas Duda was one of those Mets. And so the very good first baseman was traded to the Tampa Bay Rays. And the Tampa Bay Rays are in the same division as the Baltimore Orioles, where I was living in Baltimore at the time in grad school. And so I decided on a random, like, it might have been a Saturday, but it was like a random day in September. The Orioles were not going anywhere. And so the tickets were cheap, as they usually were. I decided to go to a Rays Orioles game so that I could see Lucas Duda. Because I was like, I miss Lucas Duda. I'm going to see Lucas Duda play. Why the heck not? So I got to the stadium real early. I made a gigantic sign that said on it, "We follow Lucas Duda," after the now debunked, sadly, Instagram account that Curtis Granderson had.
Amazing.
The best Instagram account of all time. And so I made a big sign that said, "We follow Lucas Duda." And at the bottom in like smaller letters, it said, "We miss you in New York." And so I wore my Orioles tank top because I was still rooting for the Orioles that day. No offense, Lucas, but I wore my Mets hat. And so I held the sign. I went to batting practice. I got there really early. I held the sign really, really high. And I screamed when Lucas Duda came up. And he probably looked around like, "Who the hell is this girl?" And then after batting practice, he looked at me and he pointed and he smiled in his very like coy, like Lucas Duda way. Like you could tell he was very shy about getting any attention at all. So he pointed at me and he kind of went, and he threw me this baseball, and I was like, it's like, this is the baseball that Lucas Duda threw to me.
Lucas.
Rays Orioles. Yep. So that's probably, so I've actually, fun fact about me, never caught a foul ball at a baseball game. So this is like the only game used baseball I like have.
Haven't either.
I have plenty of baseballs in my possession, but none of them are game used. So this is the only, I mean, it's batting practice used technically, but this is the only game used baseball I have in my possession because I've never caught a
foul. Meredith would have a lot to say about that distinction.
It's true.
Yeah, she would.
It's true. So yeah, so this is my pride and joy, Lucas Duda batting practice used baseball.
Lucas.
Miss him. So if, folks, Facebook, if you're just joining us, this is a pod of their own, Mets Show and Tell, second live episode of a pod of their own, episode 48 overall. You should be checking out all of the Amazing Avenue audio suite of shows if you aren't, because they all do fantastic work. We've already shouted Unformidable out on this pod, but we also have From Complex to Queens and Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. Fantastic work on all ends. You should be listening to all of our pods. But in the meantime, we will continue with Mets Show and Tell with our final round of Mets memorabilia that we are showing to you guys. So Linda, what is your final piece of memorabilia for our listeners?
All right. I hope I don't let you down. Okay, so it is Mike Piazza's book. And it is autographed.
Yeah, my Piazza.
Well, because he was doing a book signing in Barnes & Noble in the city. So I think we all took a day off of work and decided we had to go see Mike Piazza and go get an autograph book. And we got there pretty early. And the line, I kid you not, was like in the store, down the steps, like out the store, down the block, around. Like it got to the point where a cop drove by and said, "Who's doing a signing today?"
And, amazing. And you say Mike Piazza, he goes, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, like, yeah. He was like, "That makes sense. Sure." So we waited a long time. I give Mike credit. Like he was, you know, there a long time just signing book after book. And
strongest his arm has ever been.
Probably.
Sorry. I need to nag on Mike Piazza.
I remember just being like so nervous too. I'm like, you know, it's my freaking Piazza. And, you know, I'm like, what if I burst into tears or, you know, like it was just
didn't know to happen.
Yeah. Like your heart starts going, like he was like one of the first, like he met heroes I've ever like actually could like see face to face. And I was like, do I shake his hand? Like, will you allow a shake? Like, it's like the whole Seinfeld, like, do you go in for the shake? No, but he couldn't have been nicer. Like, you know, I was like, you know, thank you for everything you've done. And he was like, oh, it's so nice that you say that. And he, like, he would speak to you. It wasn't just like sign and get the hell out. Like, he would look you in the eye and he would talk to you. And, you know, they've been showing, like, they showed the Grand Slam single the other day. They showed the 10-run eighth inning against the Braves the other day. So I've been watching those and I don't feel like I appreciated Piazza enough. I feel like I kind of took him for granted. Like when Bob Costas says, you know, this is arguably the greatest hitting catcher of all time and absolutely mean it when Piazza is coming up to bat, like that means something. And I don't think I appreciated it enough as a kid. I just knew he was good and I knew, you know, he was fun to watch. And I think it was also different now too, because he was the catcher. So he was in every frame. He was always there. Yeah. And like, you know, David Wright was good, but you know, he might not see action at third base all game. So like Piazza was just, it was just cool seeing him, you know, like even when they were on defense, he was there. So that's why I broke out my old, you know, it's a Ventura jersey, but I've just been feeling nostalgic watching those old teams. And I miss watching him play. Well, I miss watching him come through and, you know, his home run, oh, the 10 run inning too, his reaction. I'm like, usually he was so calm, and to see him actually like do a fist pump, like that was big.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
he was not a fist pumper by nature.
No.
Not at all. Such an even-keeled guy, generally.
No. So just get a reaction out of him was, like, really cool. Like, you knew that was a big moment. My brother, of course, was there, which I'm so annoyed about to this day. And he's like, yeah, Shea Stadium totally shook. And I'm like, I wish I could have experienced that just one Shea Stadium shaking. I feel like that's a missed opportunity. But so, you know, taking this time, you know, I miss the Mets, but at least it's given me a new appreciation for my past Mets and, you know, and for our greatest hitting catcher of all time, arguably, I guess. But so, and he was very nice in person, because if he wasn't, it would have broken my heart. But I can say he was very nice. And I do have a picture of him signing too. So that was, so it was well worth waiting in the cold for like hours just to get like 2 seconds with him, but totally worth it.
No argument for me on the greatest hitting catcher front.
No. You know, we're a little biased, but I think I would say yes.
So I guess I'm also paying homage to a Met of the past. Jesus, sorry. Whoa.
Thank you.
Oh, no.
My cat just knocked over my leg. Wow. Live TV, folks.
This is what happens when you go live, everyone. Live camera mishaps, live cat appearances.
Screw you, cat. That was rude. But I can't believe I feed this guy. So I walked out of my house on the morning of June 2nd, 2012, at like, I woke up still high from the victory the night before with the first no-hitter, and I went to the bodega and I bought the newspaper.
Nice.
I bought all of the newspapers. And I can't remember like where I got the idea that like when something big happens, you're supposed to buy the newspaper. Yeah. So that you always have that newspaper. But I somehow had this idea. So I mean, I woke, you know, it was a younger time where I would not necessarily be awakened at like 6 a.m, but I was just so amped, even though I'd been up since like till like 2 the night before. I woke up, I was like, well, I'm awake now. Mets have a no-hitter. Oh my goodness, what should I do? And I was like, I guess I should go buy the newspaper. And I like walked to the bodega and I very excitedly explained to the guy working there what I was doing. And he just could not have been less interested in any statement that any human has made in the history of the world.
On brand for a bodega guy.
But you know, yeah, no, it felt very like true to form. But I got my no hand. And this, I did like this one where it just says yes.
Like, yes. Like, no effort.
Sums it up. Yes. And yeah, it was just a good, yeah. And I just, this was a fun one too. It showed like the progression.
Oh. Of
there was some really good coverage of that. But yeah, so it's, you know, and I have a couple other, I have like the newspapers from when they went, from they clinched the NLCS and went to the World Series. If they ever do anything good again,
if baseball
happens again, I will happily buy more newspapers. I think this is like the only like physical newspapers I've purchased in like a decade. But
I'm pretty sure I have the newspapers from Piazza's home run after September 11th.
I had one. I definitely had one. So this room behind you is my childhood bedroom because I'm living at home this year, and it used to be like, because my parents redid my childhood bedroom. My parents redid my childhood bedroom and my brother's childhood bedroom since we both moved out when I was in grad school and my brother was in college / his job. They redid the rooms to be like more, less like childhood bedrooms and more like guest rooms, you know, to take the like childhood part out of it. So this room is the walls are the same color, but they used to be like covered in posters and shit. And so one of the things that used to be on the wall was the Mike Piazza newspaper, the newspaper after the Mike Piazza 9/11 home run. But
you know, I think I had it hanging up in my bedroom too, because I remember the frosted tips. Now, he had his helmet off and the frosted tips.
Oh, those frosted tips.
I do not know where it is now. I still
have frosted tips every day. Yeah, I don't know where mine is either.
I was going to show it for this. I was looking for it and I don't know where it is. Parents staring downstairs in their general direction. They either got rid of it or like, I don't know what happened to it, but I couldn't find it. So I do have that. And I had less exciting, but I did have also the newspaper from Tom Glavine's 300th win. So I also had that.
I mean, that's historic, kind of.
Yeah, it's historic. I know that he's not like a beloved Met by any stretch of the imagination because of certain events that occurred, but I still thought it was newspaper clipping
worthy. We were at his game the day after, or not the day, his start after he got the 300th win, and where they like honored him on the field. So that's like my most vivid memory of Tom Glavine, is the day or the game after he won it. But
I also had I had like a big, I think it must have been from a newspaper or like a magazine, but it was one of those like inset things that like folds out and into like a poster size thing.
Oh.
And it was like a poster of like all the greatest moments in Mets history up until that point, but the poster's from like 2005. So like it's you know, pre-2005, all the best moments, like including the like 69 World Series against by Buckner, like all the stuff in Mets history. And like the very last like section of the poster, I can't remember, it was like the top 10. Number 10 was like the future, and it had pictures of like brand new baby faced fresh David Wright and Jose Reyes on it. So that was pretty cool.
Aww.
So at the time it was the future, so it's funny to think about. So that's another thing I had on my wall, as well as a photo of the entire 2005 Mets roster. Now that's remembering some guys.
Let wow. me just tell
you. Well, that's the only time like Mike Piazza and David Wright were together, or yep. was it before they called David Wright up?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Because that would be cool to have then.
I if think they were it together. Might be. I can't. Is David Wright? Was David Wright in that picture? I can't remember. I can't go look at it because it's gone now. But yeah, it was. You know when they have the team photo days in spring training and they take the picture of the entire roster. So it was that photo. But yeah. Anyway, so Linda and I are once again mirroring, and I have an autograph as my final piece. So I kind of have like. It's kind of like Maggie with her scorebooks. Like, I have two separate things that are related, that are part of the same sort of set of things. And they're both Tom Seaver related. And they were both, like, presents for my dad for his birthday or Father's Day. So, one year for, I believe this one was Father's Day, we put my dad in the car. We didn't tell him where we were going. We were just like, this is a gift. We're taking you somewhere and we're not telling you where. And it turned out to be a Tom Seaver autograph session. So
oh, wow.
This is a photo of Tom Seaver that we got autographed at the autograph session. And my dad had no idea that's where we were going. We like hid this from him. The picture that was at that time unsigned. And we took him to a random like sporting goods store in Westfield, which is like three towns over from me. It does that.
All of these things always are.
Yeah. So random. And it does not exist anymore. That store. I know that for a fact. It is gone now, but the photo remains. And I must have been, I'm trying to remember how old I was, because I don't remember what year this was exactly, but I was probably like late middle school, early high school age, so like 14 or 15. And I just remember being like totally starstruck by Tom Seaver. Like, I was like, do I call him Mr. Seaver? What do I do? I was just like, hi. I must
you
have sounded like.
You don't call him anything, child.
I must have sounded like a complete freaking doofus, but it was still really cool. And my dad was really happy that we got this. So yeah, he has this framed and this is in our house. So that was that. And then another year for my dad's 50th birthday, so 10 years ago now, we went to Cooperstown to the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he took a picture of the Tom Seaver display in Cooperstown and then got it framed. So that's also framed in our house. So, yep, two Tom Seaver pieces, courtesy of my dad, that I was present for both of them. Gifts for my dad for his birthday and Father's Day, because Tom Seaver has always been very special Met for him, just like Mike Piazza is for me. So those are our Tom Seaver memorabilia. So that's what I have for my final piece. So that's
great. It really is hard meeting, like, Mets royalty. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel like I'm such, like... You get so starstruck, like, what do I say? What do I do?
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, that is, like, because, you know, it's when you see, because I met, obviously, like, when we got that autograph, it was, like, many years after Tom Seaver was a player, and so, like, he doesn't look like,
yeah, he's
exactly,
like a legend.
Yeah, it doesn't look exactly how he looks in the pictures, but, like, obviously, I'd seen him in the booth, and, like, all that, so I was like, yeah, that's him, that's actually him in the flesh, right in front of my face. So it's pretty crazy.
You know, they're actual people, not just people you see on TV all the time.
Right, exactly. Actual human beings. And yeah, it's just, and now like looking back, now that like Seaver has his diagnosis and everything like that, it's been really emotional and hard. Like, I'm glad that my family had that moment with him, and that my dad got to meet him in real life. It was pretty cool. Yeah. So that is cool stuff. So those are our Mets memorabilia. I hope
show us yours.
Yeah. Tweet at us. tweet us yours. Actually, as like a bonus, I'm not gonna like go over and show all my individual bobbleheads, but if I duck out of the frame, all my bobbleheads are on that shelf behind me. You can kind of see them. So that's my entire bobblehead collection on that shelf back there.
Oh, I have a lot more ticket stubs too. I keep them in a book. So I think, like, other than my Beanie Baby one, the other one that I really like, I wrote about this too, is it was a month after they called David Wright up in 2004. So I feel like that that one kind of is special to me, because at the time I was like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And like me and Allison said, I was kind of annoyed he was displacing Ty Wigginton.
Naive as we were.
So like looking back on it, that one kind of is kind of special to me too. But then there's others. I'm like, I don't remember this game at all. Why is it saying I was there? I don't remember this. Like,
I have a giant pile of them, and I have to figure out, because I think a lot of them I just sort of stuffed in there, and I'm sure most of them are garbage, and I should probably but then how would I know, though? I'd have to sit down and cross-reference every game.
Yeah, with the box score and be like, what happened? Did something important happen in this game?
I mean, maybe if I'm like quarantined for months during a global pandemic, I would have that.
Yeah, maybe that sounds like a quarantine activity.
But like, I don't know, I miss having the stubs.
Well, aren't they completely doing away with all of those tickets now?
I think so.
And like, they want you to use either the app or the print at home. But the only reason I still get them is because my brother, he works for a healthcare company, and then one of the doctors is a season ticket holder, and he still gets the book of tickets.
So
my brother buys them off of him, so I still have ticket stubs from like last year because he still got them. But like you said, I don't know how much longer that's gonna be.
Yeah, I think maybe they were gonna get rid of them for this year, because I remember there being some, maybe it was the Yankees, but I remember there being some hubbub about not doing any of the classic ticket stubs anymore. Like, it was all printout.
Yeah.
Or not even printout. I mean, they just want to take it off your phone now. They don't want
like mobile paper tickets.
Look, I still have my original Titanic movie stub, and then I have the movie stub from when it got re-released, so I have both.
I don't know if I have all 7 of my Titanic ticket stubs, but that sounds like something I would have done.
I won New Year's Day 1998 for $5 to go see Titanic.
Yeah.
I went not the day it opened. I was very, very angry at my parents for not taking me the day it opened. I went the day after it opened, like a sucker.
Oh, I went because my birthday is January 4th, and you know, for my birthday, my parents always took me to a movie, so that was the one I wanted to go see for my birthday. So
there you go. Yeah, there were a bunch of things, including a 1973 World Series ticket stub that my dad has, that were like almost honorable mentions for this show and tell.
Yeah.
That I decided not to show. My parents and I actually had a really good time, like going in down in the basement and like digging through like all their Mets stuff they have, because they have like a shit ton of cool stuff.
Oh my God. That
maybe if we do like a, I don't even know, like a VIP bonus content at some point for our non-existent Patreon subscribers. Subscribe to our non-existent Patreon, and maybe at the $5 a month level, you can, I can show you all of the other things that did not make the cut for this. I figured it was cheating to show, even though these things are like really cool, like autographed baseballs from like Mookie Wilson and like really cool stuff that my parents have, I figured it was cheating to not, to include things that I was not involved in any way.
Yeah. Well, I will say, if listeners and viewers enjoy this, I could come up with 3 more items.
Yeah, we have
there's
lots
not
of shit.
A lot of baseball content out there, folks. If you want a part 2 of Show and Tell, we can give
if you
a part.
If you want more Show and Tell, please tweet at us, because like, yeah, I'm a hoarder. I have tons of stuff. Like, I can go through my entire bottle collection.
Yeah. My entire
and now
stuff.
The cat just knocked over my entire leg on the floor. The cat is fired.
Primo content.
Poor kitty.
Maggie's cat.
Poor kitty's name.
Chibi. Aww. Which is Japanese for tiny, and it doesn't encompass how much of a jerk he is. If he was nice at other times, I wouldn't be so mad at him.
Anyhow, yeah, if you like this, let us know. Also, please, like, show us your favorite Mets stuff. We want to see pictures of all your stuff. We want to see it. Tweet at us.
Yeah, there's got to be cool stuff out there.
Yeah, I bet you guys have really cool stuff. Especially, so this is directed at a very niche part of our audience. The Venn diagram between For All You Kids Out There and us. So, like, if you have, like, an Omer Santos Lightning shirt or something weird like that, a Gabriel Ulloa Yakult Swallow shirt, I want to see that stuff, too. Really weird stuff. Show it to me. I want to see all of it.
Or like weird jerseys, like,
yeah, like
said.
Weird jerseys, your weirdest jersey, like the guy that you want us to remember online. Show us the jersey.
I once saw a Rod Barajas jersey.
Amazing.
I was like, you know what, I respect that.
That is content I want. That is content I want. Show me your Rod Barajas jerseys.
Oh gosh, who was it now? I'm totally blanking out. I don't think it wasn't Sean Gilmartin, but it was Sean Gilmartin adjacent.
Sean Gilmartin's wife's the press secretary now. He's very famous.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I mean, now I'm suddenly wondering if it was him. But it was, I saw someone wearing a camo. Like the cap, it must have been Memorial. Oh, yeah. Like a full camo Sean Gilmartin, like authentic camo jersey.
What?
I was like that is one way to spend $300.
That's, yeah, somebody incredible. Spend money on that.
Like, that is wild. I'm gonna go crazy. I have to, like, dig back into my old, like, photo archives, because of course I took a picture of it, and see if I could figure out who it was, because, man, that was something else.
I think I might have told this story on the podcast before, but I haven't told it to our live audience, I think. So, like, my favorite jersey I've ever seen in person, it was, and I've seen it multiple times because it was a guy. It was back when we used to have the, like, we never had, like, season tickets or even, like, half season, but we had, like, the 12-game pack or whatever when I was in high school. So we sat in the same section for, like, a bunch of games in the aughts. And so I remember another guy who must have the same pack as us or season tickets or something in our section.
You get to know your section.
Exactly.
Yeah. Had your section mates.
A custom authentic jersey, and on the back it just said Stings for Lastings Millage.
Oh, jeez.
instead of Millage, it just said Stings. Wow. And it was my favorite thing. So we always used to yell at him and be like, hey, Stings, down in front, sit down. Oh, it was great. It's great. So, yeah, that one's my favorite. But, yeah, all your weird stuff, your autograph stuff, your really cool ticket stubs, your newspapers, your scorecards.
Your favorite scorecard.
Yeah, scorecards. We want to see all of it, so tweet it all at us. But, yeah, by the way, if you're just joining us, this is A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 48 of A Pod of Their Own, live, second live episode. We have done Mets Show and Tell this week, where each of us showed you all of our favorite Mets memorabilia. If you missed it, you should go back and watch it. But we will now close the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Linda Cerevich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is I am, well, not officially, but it's mostly official. I am now the proud owner of my own co-op. I bought my own place.
So grown up.
I'm going to have a mortgage. Like,
doing adult stuff.
I know. Like, what?
But I have two kids, and I still think, like, whoa, home ownership seems like a big deal.
Yeah. It's a process I don't recommend in the best of times, and then this was not the best of times.
Yeah.
So the process was a nightmare. Having to get stuff notarized during a pandemic is a nightmare. Nobody being in an office is a nightmare. So everybody working from home is a nightmare. But the mortgage rates are really low right now.
I bet they are.
So I got it at a good time, maybe. But I'm like, well, now that, like, because then I had to go and I had an interview with the co-op board in a Zoom meeting. And the woman I interviewed with was fabulous. She was, like, making me laugh. And She said, I can't throw any like librarian raves. So I was like, oh, darn. So there goes my plan. But I'm like, really, I'm a librarian. How much trouble could I get into?
I know a couple of librarians who...
We can get a little wild.
Set a high bar on that.
So I still don't have an official closing date because, of course, there's multiple things popping up that you still need to do. And I'm trying not to freak out about all the money that's going into it. And, you know, you need like the second half of the down payment. And then I got to buy furniture. So I'm trying not to have like, you know, freak out too much about that. But but I am like, I have a little patio that I'm excited about. So I'm like, when it's warm, I can be out on my patio. And I wish the Mets were playing because that would be perfect. And but so, yeah, I guess I'm an adult now.
It's a pretty big adult step.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I just kind of, you know, I had been saving for a while. And I was like, you know, if I'm not going to spend my money on this, what will I ever spend it on? So this is something it feels like good that I'm kind of investing in and doing finally. So I will be podcasting from a new location in maybe next month, from a secret location next month. So maybe, yeah, my background will be different if we ever do another live one. So I'm just hoping my cat, I know I'm a crazy cat lady. I hope my Jakey is okay with the move because I am kind of worried about that. But other than that, I'm excited and, you know, I just want it done. But, you know, we're moving in the right direction.
That's super exciting. I will also be moving this summer to Washington, D.C., everyone. So I'm also going to be moving. I'm not buying a house because I don't have enough money yet. Although this year living at home was, in theory, socking away money for a down payment when I eventually do decide I want to buy something. So I do have that socked away that I hopefully won't have to dip into because of pandemic-related nonsense. But yeah, just got to get my job situation sorted and we're hopefully on the way towards that. But yeah, I will also be podcasting from a new location starting in sometime in August, probably. So things are happening. So Maggie, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I thought, and I don't know if this is going to translate, but I thought I would also do a show and tell walk-off win.
Ooh. Yes.
And that is that the kids and I did a butterfly garden.
Oh, I love those.
And I'm trying to get as much of the actual butterflies and less of
the see one.
Yeah, there they are.
There they are.
So and it was amazing. It was super fun. And I definitely I will say moving the chrysalises from, you know, they start off in this little like tub of caterpillars, moving them into the butterfly garden was like the most terrifying thing because you're like, they're held on by like thread and you can't, and you're like, how are they not just falling immediately? But they didn't fall, and all of five of them emerged, and we actually got to watch one of them in the process which is amazing. You know, we went over, we're like, oh look, there's two now, and I was like, everybody, come see this! Oh my god, hurry, hurry, hurry! And it's been really fun, and it's like, I don't know, I think the whole shebang comes to like $25 once you get the caterpillars too, and it's just really fun, and like the kids loved it, but also we grown-ups loved it. So I would say like this might be one of those things that feels weird to like buy a kid's butterfly garden kit if you don't have kids, but you should do it anyway because it's awesome. And we're gonna have like a little going away party for them in the park on Friday.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
So that was my. I'm
gonna show
them off again
because that's so cool.
Here we got five. All five of our caterpillars are now beautiful butterflies. They're hiding all of their beautiful colors right now. They are painted lady butterflies.
So
they're
very nice.
Orange. But yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of have an awful story.
Oh, no.
I don't know if I should tell.
Well, you have to now because you started with that.
On one hand, you opened with that. And on the other hand, this is walk-off wins. It's supposed to be happy.
It's kind of fun. funny, but it's also kind of awful. It's just before my, I think it was before my time, but they did that as a project at the library. Like, you know, they had them in the children's room and, you know, everything. And they had, you know, they were in the chrysalises, and then they said you have to clean them. So one of the older librarians, like, cleaned everything. She, like, took out the chrysalises and everything. And the children's librarian at the time was on vacation because she was the one that had been taking care of them. So the other librarian didn't know and just, like, cleaned everything. So then they're like, what are we going to tell the librarian when she comes back from vacation? Like, she's going to be really upset. So...
They went to a farm upstate, you see.
That's what they said. They're like, oh, we released them. It was beautiful.
Well, I wasn't hoping that one of them wouldn't make it. But I thought if one did, that would be a really nice, like, low-level intro to death for the kids. Oh, it would just be like an entry-level sort of, this is what it is. But that didn't happen, and that's for the best, and, like, they'll learn eventually. But there are, like, lots of humorous tales of, you know, what's it? Negligent homicide. Of,
yeah, the butterflies didn't make it. I'm sorry, ours didn't make it.
Oh no, that's deeply unfortunate. But yeah,
we have the butterfly garden, like, outside too, and that's where they were going to put them because we do get butterflies. So they're like, oh yeah, they're out there, they're fine.
Yeah, look at them. Those are same guys, them totally out there. The same. Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely same ones. I recognize that one. That's Larry. I see him
for sure.
Absolutely, that's Larry. Can't mistake
really
it.
Cannot identify these. We have five of them, and they are enclosed in a cage. And I could not tell you which was which. I tried really hard. I was like, I'm going to remember that one.
No matter. And there's some way to differentiate the males from the females, and I can't remember what it is.
It's like look on between their legs.
No, it's something else.
I know how to do it in fruit flies. I don't know about butterflies.
No, it's something on them. It's never gonna come to me.
But yeah, as a biologist, like, butterflies are always, like, the example I give to, like, younger kids of, like, this is nature. This is biology. This is, like, really cool. Mm-hmm. Science is awesome. Like, look at this animal that can completely transform itself. And it's, like, a really cool intro to, like, the amazing, like, for a little bit older kids, to the amazingness of genetics, too. Because it's, like, this caterpillar and this butterfly have the same exact set of genes. It is the same organism. It is just turning on different parts of its genes at different times in its life cycle, and it can transform itself completely into almost an entirely different animal. Isn't that
you
cool?
You have to hear my 3-year-old say the word metamorphosis, because it's really something special.
It's like Nemo trying to say anemone.
Well, don't hurt yourself.
Don't hurt yourself.
So
I guess I hadn't thought about this until Maggie said that her walk-off win was show and tell. I guess I can show my walk-off win too. I hadn't planned on it, but I can. It's right over here.
Linda, why didn't you show us your house? My God.
I know, obviously. Jeez, why didn't you take us on a virtual Zoom tour? Come on. So my walk-off win for this week is that my college friends and I, you know, in the absence of, like, being able to hang out together and, like, have parties and do stuff and, you know, have game nights and whatever, we decided to start a friends book club. So we have formed, Linda's very excited about
that. Okay, so it's up my alley.
Yay! So we formed, like, a group chat on WhatsApp, and are doing, like, and are going to start doing Zoom calls, for our book club every, like, couple weeks or month. We haven't decided the duration yet, but we have decided our first book. So that's the show portion, and it's going to be Valentine by Elizabeth Wetmore. So that is our first book. It was a book of the month club book, which is why it has this little insignia. Oh. My parents actually, this ended up being a gift that paid me back inadvertently, because I got my parents, like, a 6-month subscription to Book of the Month Club for Christmas this year. And this was one of the books they picked one of the months. I think it was like 2 months ago. This was one of the choices and they picked it. And I was like, oh wait, I already have a copy of that. Cool. So this is going to be our first book. And I'm really excited to do Friends Book Club. So that's my walk-off win for this week. Friends Book Club. So yeah, that does it for the show this week. We're really happy you guys could join us for Mets Show and Tell. So thank you everyone who joined us on Facebook and left us really nice comments and followed along. For those of you who either couldn't join live or don't have Facebook or don't know how Facebook works or only like to listen to podcasts while you drive or something like that. Although you shouldn't be driving
don't
places
watch
right
the video
now.
While you drive.
No,
don't do
no.
that. Absolutely don't do that. And don't Pull drive
over.
Anywhere you shouldn't be driving.
A safe space and watch it now.
Yes, absolutely. But this will also be available in your regular podcasting formats tomorrow morning, like it always is. Although, full disclosure, I am a complete doofus and started recording it too late, so there's a little bit that's going to be cut off at the beginning. I'll put a disclosure in. It's fine. I'm the worst. I started drinking gin too soon, as we all know. But it's not that much of the show that's cut off. It's only the very, very beginning.
It's not part. Starting too soon. That's the problem. It's finishing too late.
Exactly.
Boom. I like the way you think, Maggie Wiggin. So yeah, so that's the show for this week. It'll be available in a podcast form tomorrow, like it always is. In the meantime, you can go to amazingavenue.com, read all of our fantastic content. We have a series right now where everybody's writing about the most memorable game they ever went to. So Linda contributed to that, as she mentioned in the pod. I think I'll write that up at some point. That's been a thing I've been meaning to do and haven't gotten around to. We'll be doing another round of recommendations. So we did a recommendation series where we recommended our favorite TV shows, books, podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to be doing another round of that for you guys. So we have tons of content still, even though there's no baseball, over at amazingavenue.com. So go check that out. You should follow Amazing Avenue on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You should also be listening to all of our other sister and brother podcasts on the Amazing Avenue Audio Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. Tweet us all your memorabilia and weird stuff that you have. You can follow
Let's
each-
be clear about weird stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Mets related.
Baseball.
Weird baseball stuff. Don't be sliding into our DMs with, like, I don't even want to know.
Weird baseball stuff.
Weird jerseys only. So, yeah, you should follow us on Twitter, at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us individually on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Cervich.
And you, Maggie?
No weird stuff.
No weird stuff.
At Maggie162.
Except Baby Met. Except
Some
Baby
weird
Met.
Stuff.
Weird baby Met.
Weird baby Met shit you can send to Linda. At Linda Servich, send her baby Met stuff. So yeah, you follow each of us on Twitter, follow the show on Twitter. The original intro and outro to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. Bye, folks. See you next time. I'm going to end the live now somehow. I forget how to do it. So we're still live, even though I don't know how to do it.
We're still live.
I'm going to
stop
live stream. That's how you do it. Bada bing.